Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Invisible War by Joe Kasabian. Narrated by Eric Michael Summerer. Chapter 1. The white screen of my laptop had been glowing in the dark of my office for hours now. It had been meaninglessly burning my eyes as my fingers loomed over its keyboard, still refusing to type anything. This had become a daily ritual for me over the last several years. Set my alarm for 6:30 in the morning, make a large pot of coffee, prep my writing station for work, and then write absolutely nothing. I would pace back and forth within the confines of my office and smoke too many cigarettes until their crumbled butts filled an ashtray like a disorganized cemetery. My office was a small, cramped space. It was the smallest room in our apartment. Its walls were lined with movie posters and old band album covers interspersed with literary awards from years past. Best New Author, Sargis Hakopian. Up-and-coming science fiction author, Sargis Hakopian. Best New Release, Denison of Earth, by Sargis Hakopian. None of the awards were from the last 10 years. I had hardly written a single word in that time. Instead, every morning, I would go through my routine and hope without hope the motivation that pushed me toward finishing that book would return. I told myself it was writer's block, but after so many years, I wasn't sure if it was or if I just had nothing else left to write. I leaned back in my worn swivel chair, a Lucky Luna brand cigarette in my mouth, the smoke making small twists and turns in front of my face when I heard music from the other side of the apartment. It was my wife's alarm. She had her own morning rituals. Wake up to an annoying pop song she would then put on snooze several times. Then she would turn it off, roll over, and scroll through her Neural X app's social media function. She would look at the photos posted by friends and influencers before switching over to short videos that would make her laugh in the way that only people who are still half asleep laugh. This was my opening to end the charade of my writing process. I got out of my chair, stubbed out my cigarette, and sprayed air freshener above my head. She hated me smoking in the apartment, and this was my poor attempt to hide it. Of course, this hid nothing from her. She just pretended she didn't notice so long as the smell didn't leave the office. I closed the office door behind me and approached our kitchen. It was small but clean. Cleaning was one of the activities I would eventually move toward once I sat in front of my computer long enough. After a few hours of not writing, I would frantically clean the kitchen and the floors and do our laundry. I preferred to clean over going for a jog, which I would finally do to avoid work once I had smoked all my cigarettes and cleaned the entire apartment. I placed a pod into the coffee machine and set a cup under its nozzle as I pulled several pieces of fresh fruit out of the fridge. I had no idea what kind of fruit it was, but she loved it. She bought it, insisting it was full of antioxidants or was good for her skin. I don't remember which one anymore. I cut them into slices and aligned them neatly in a circle around the edge of a small plate. I set the coffee and fruit on the kitchen table just as my wife emerged from the bedroom. Her thick brown hair poured down around the frames of her face and onto her shoulders. Her half-open and red almond-shaped eyes looked up at me, still wishing they were asleep. She shuffled over to me and draped her arms around my shoulders. I was a full head taller than her, so she had to push herself onto her toes. "Good morning, baby," I kissed her on her forehead. "Good morning, my love," she moaned through her early morning exhaustion. "How is your writing going?"
"Good," I lied. It was the only thing I had ever lied to her about. At first, I thought it would only be a white lie, a lie that would only go on for a few weeks or months. Now, 10 years later, she either must have thought I was writing the next science fiction magnum opus, or she knew I was lying and didn't care anymore. I kissed her on the forehead again, and she shuffled over to the table, drinking the coffee like she would die without it. She made this cute, high-pitched noise when she had her first cup of coffee in the morning, and she picked apart her fruit with a spoon. "You think you have another long day at work?" I asked. She always had a long day at work. We had met in high school on Luna and had been together ever since. Unlike me, she had always had her nose to the grindstone. She went to the best university Luna had to offer, and as soon as she graduated, jumped into a high-profile job with Peacekeeper, the gig-based police app that controlled every bit of law enforcement on Earth and beyond. I still had no idea what exactly she did there, but I knew it must have been significant. She would be out the door by 8 or 9 and be at the office for 10 hours or more. It wasn't uncommon for her boss, some eccentric member of the royal cabal, to lock the doors and keep people at work for days at a time. The one time I went into their offices for a family work function before those were outlawed by royal decree, I saw their meeting room was lined with posters that encouraged people to stay later and later and adopt increasingly more psychotic work habits. Embrace hardcore work thought. The Techno King is working. Are you? Did you know the human body only requires 3 hours of sleep per night? In the early days of her career, I often tried to talk her into leaving and taking a job anywhere else. In some normal, smaller company not owned by the royal monopoly and run by a member of the king's royal cabal. However, eventually, the perks of working there were hard to deny. Working directly for the cabal meant a free apartment, free shuttle rides, and a massive bump in our social scores. As a writer from a backwater family, my social score would barely hope ever to crack 300. It was enough to be allowed to move to Earth, use the transit apps, and rent a place to live, though it would have been a slum compared to the place we had. Since I was married to someone like her, my social score was nearly 800 last time I checked, allowing me to do pretty much whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. She was also close to the levers of power, which meant having a good salary and a pension most people didn't have. It, however, meant that, in the meantime, she would be a literal servant to one of the Techno King's countless idiot sons, elevated to an executive board position based only on the merits of which set of balls he had rocketed out of.
"It's always a long day, baby," she said with a mouthful of fruit.
"Happy anniversary, by the way," I kissed her on the top of the head.
"Shit," she groaned. "I forgot."
She always forgot. I didn't take it personally. How could I? Most of the time she was working so hard for so long she wasn't even sure what day of the week it was. One time she had lost an entire month on some forced work trip to Ganymede that had been sprung on her at the last second by Peacekeeper's CEO, and today made it 10 years since we had married on Luna. Neither of us liked the place. Luna was the only city on the moon and was more of a small town than a proper city. Everyone knew everybody, and they all liked to talk. You couldn't so much as cough there without hearing at some point through the rumor mill that you were sick with something serious and you only had a few months to live. The only reason we had the ceremony there was to make it easier for our families to attend, which we didn't even like all that much. It was a better option than hearing them complain about it for the rest of our lives. I laughed playfully and ran my hand through her hair.
"It's okay, baby. I'll bring some dinner up to your office later, and maybe we can have a date for a few minutes before you have to go back to work."
"I can make some time around 7 or 8, probably."
"I'll clear my busy schedule," I joked. She got up from the table and went back to the room to get dressed. I made another cup of coffee and finished the fruit she hadn't touched. She rarely ate all her food, and one of my most important jobs in our relationship was cleaning our plates. The fruit was bitter and sour, but good. I still didn't think it did anything for my thinning hair or dry skin like she claimed it would. She emerged from the room dressed in the best clothes someone from our social score was allowed to wear. A white shirt paired with flowing brown pants and black shoes. I thought she looked beautiful from the time she rolled out of bed, but she always insisted if she didn't dress in a way that reflected her station in life, her annoying boss would claim she looked like an ungrateful peasant. She had also straightened her hair to hide her amazing wavy curls I loved so much.
"How do I look?"
she asked. I never knew why she bothered asking me. I had never seen her look anything but incredible on any single day since I met her when we were teenagers. "Like those assholes don't deserve you?" She smiled, walked over to me, and kissed me on the forehead. Now that I was sitting down, she could reach it.
"Thank you, baby."
She shouldered her blue purse and made for the door.
"See you at dinner. Can you grab something from the seafood place we like?"
she asked, with one foot out of the front door. Of course. Same place as always, I smiled. I wouldn't miss it for the world. She blew me a kiss and closed the door behind her, the highlight of my day now over. It was only 9 in the morning, and I was out of things to do. I could, of course, attempt to write again, but I wasn't a fan of lying to myself. As if on cue, my Neural X app sent me a push notification. A small red bell popped up in the corner of my right eye. I ran my eye over it and clicked it mentally.
Hey, Sargis, it's Lilith.
My literary agent. The longest-suffering poor bastard at her agency, assigned to put up with years of my bullshit with, so far, minimal reward. Morning, Lilith, I sent back. She knew as well as everyone else that I hadn't written a single word, but she was diligent in her job. At this point, her job mostly boiled down to ensuring I was still alive every few weeks.
Can you come by the office today? A few people want to talk about what you're working on. You missed your last deadline, and people are getting concerned.
Missed my last deadline, she said. I couldn't help but laugh. I missed so many deadlines now that the notices they had sent me of them would fill the book I hadn't been writing. Yeah, I can be there in a few minutes.
Thank you, Sargis.
After I closed out her message, I was greeted by an ad. The naked 3D form of a woman jumped out in front of my eyes, and no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't exit it.
Lonely?
Its robotic, inhuman voice cooed at me.
Download the e-girlfriend app today and have me at your fingertips.
After she said her piece, the ad closed automatically. I was starting to think my early morning search engine history was getting depressing if the Neural X app was pushing me fake girlfriend ads. I tossed away the remains of my leftover breakfast and returned to the bedroom to get dressed. I could still smell her perfume lingering in the air, vanilla with a hint of tobacco. It was her favorite, and the smell of it and her were inextricable. I sat in the cloud momentarily before opening my closet and picking out a torn pair of jeans and a wrinkled button-up shirt. When I pulled the jeans up, I saw a stain around the knee, but decided I didn't care all that much. My dress standards could not have been more different than hers when she went to work. The fact that I had even put real pants on today meant it was momentous. The last time I saw Lilith, I had walked into the office in a ratty t-shirt and pajama pants, and nobody even batted an eye. I laced up an old pair of trainers and left the apartment, locking the door behind me with my palm scan.
Going out today?
Another ad popped up in front of my eyes.
Why not call a Flux Taxi? Riders with a social score of above 500 get 50% off for the next 10 minutes.
I clicked the exit button and kept walking. In all their brilliance, the Techno King and his royal cabal had made the self-driving Flux Taxis the only means of public transit in Prime City. The fact that, much like Peacekeeper, Flux Taxi was owned by a member of the cabal probably had something to do with it. Any app that got big enough was eventually absorbed by the cabal one way or another and simply became part of the government. Whoever was folded into the cabal made little difference to everyday people other than I would suddenly start getting more ads for their app or product that would suddenly become an unavoidable part of my daily life. I turned the corner out of our neighborhood and ignored another Flux Taxi ad asking if I was really sure I wanted to walk to my destination. Now the discount was 70% if I ordered one in the next 5 minutes. I hated Flux Taxi, but my wife swore by them. The last time we had ordered one of the rare nights we were able to go on a date, the full moon fooled the taxi's self-driving computer sensors into flying into oncoming traffic and nearly killed a pedestrian. She insisted they were still working through the kinks and that it was fine. Prime City was not an easily walkable place. The sidewalks had fallen into disrepair, and most crosswalk lights no longer worked. People with higher social scores didn't have to worry about such things, as their Flux Taxis flew through the air, hundreds of feet above the ground, avoiding traffic. People with lower scores would have to take ground-based taxis with just as malfunctioning self-driving systems across pothole-filled roads. It made crossing any road something of a complicated process, as you had to make sure some brain-dead self-driving taxi wasn't going to crash into you from one direction or another on top of not twisting your ankle in a pothole that was so large it looked like it had been left there by an explosive of some kind.
"Hey!"
someone called out. I kept walking, assuming whoever it was wasn't talking to me. That assumption was quickly ruined by the feeling of a hand on my shoulder, the force of which spun me around to face them. Two men, both wearing peacekeeper uniforms. A dull blue number that had their computer-generated badge number over their chest and was covered from neck to hem in ads for different apps. They wore belts that hung heavy with different weapons, ranging from a baton to a pistol. Working for Peacekeeper was a social safety net for people with low scores, no criminal record, and a penchant for ruthless violence. Their ranks were full of the star high school quarterback everyone hated so much, or the guy who did a few too many steroids to qualify to work for Firefighter, the other emergency services app. Over the years, I had learned to tiptoe around Peacekeeper workers as if they were feral dogs.
"Did you know there is a discount today on Flux taxis?"
one of the peacekeepers asked me. He was a short, round, bald man with a red face who resembled a human thumb with a drinking problem. "Yeah, I saw the ads."
"And you're walking."
"I like getting out and enjoying the fresh air." That was a complete lie. Prime City was a smog-filled hellhole most months of the year. The city was lined with gigafactories, and since air quality couldn't be controlled with an app of some kind, no laws stopped them from sending a cascading cloud of industrial refuse down onto the city. It was all part of the Techno King's philosophy of hardcore work thought. The idea was that nothing should stand in the way of progress. Progress, in this case, only meant profit for those lucky enough to benefit from being connected to the cabal. The look on the two peacekeepers' faces told me they weren't buying my bullshit. Typically, lying to their faces had the same difficulty level as tricking a baby into thinking you had stolen their nose. Suddenly, a push notification popped up in front of my eyes. "Your social score has been decreased by 50 points by local law enforcement. Peacekeeper, keeping the peace since 3476. Is your social score above 600? Subscribe to our Platinum program today and have your emergency calls responded to first."
"Lying to law enforcement is against the user agreement of the Neural X app," the other peacekeeper said.
She was a full head taller than me and was so skinny that she equipped synthetic connectors around her waist to hold up her oversized belt. It never ceased to amaze me how many different things seemed to violate the Neural X user agreement. Not that we could opt out, as implantation of a Neural X chip into the base of one's skull was required by law after you turned 6 months old. I bit my lip. It would be a shame if someone told the executive board of Peacekeeper how you were out harassing an innocent person just walking down the street.
"Oh, and you think you can just dial up a member of the cabal, do you?"
laughed the thumb-looking man.
"Maybe an ass-whooping would teach you a lesson."
They pulled the batons out of the holsters on their belt, their knuckles tightening around them until they turned white.
"Let's protect and serve the hell out of this little shit," the tall woman grinned.
I held my hands up in front of my face and winced. I sent them both a push notification seconds before the first blow was about to hit.
"Anoush Hakopian, age 35, executive director for Peacekeeper Marketing, married to Sargis Hakopian, age 34.
They both stopped in their tracks, the batons hanging in the air in front of my face as if stopped by an invisible force field.
"Sargis Hakopian,"
the tall woman read off.
"Yeah, that's me."
"Your social score has increased 50 points as a bonus for using the Peacekeeper app. Peacekeeper, keeping the peace since 3476.
"Sorry for the mix-up, sir. Have a good day,"
the tall woman said.
"Don't forget to give us a review on the app. I'm trying to get promoted,"
the thumb-looking man smiled.
"Sure thing, buddy,"
I nodded. I flicked my eyes over to the Peacekeeper app and left them both one-star reviews. I clicked on a tab labeled Use of Force Complaint, but it only went to an error page.
"Aw, come on, man,"
the thumb-looking man said. The two of them walked away, clearly disappointed at the exchange. If I had been anyone else, I would have been beaten to within an inch of my life or worse. When I was a teenager on Luna, a friend had been caught jaywalking and found himself quickly harassed by several Peacekeeper workers. They deducted his social score several times for talking back to them, and then when he left them one-star reviews on the app, they broke his legs by throwing him in front of a Flux taxi. His family later filed a complaint, but Peacekeeper investigated Peacekeeper and concluded that no wrongdoing had occurred. My friend had simply tripped, fell, and landed in the middle of oncoming traffic while his hands were locked behind his back in a set of handcuffs. It was strange how often that happened. I hadn't nearly gotten my ass kicked since I was a kid, so I lit a cigarette to help me process it as I continued on my surprisingly eventful walk toward my agent's office. You recently left two different one-star reviews on Peacekeeper regarding badge numbers 9966 and 7654. Have you considered that you were wrong in this situation and should apologize to the brave men and women who serve your community? Two buttons were under the message, yes or no. I clicked no. Your social score has been reduced by 50 points for holding radical political views. Your information has been forwarded to the extremist monitoring app, Prevent. I cursed to myself. This is why I didn't leave the apartment if I could help it. As soon as those thoughts crossed my mind, a Flux taxi plummeted out of the sky and crashed into a supermarket. Crowds of people ran screaming from the crash zone. Some had their clothes set on fire, and they rolled around in the street, trying to put them out. A bright fireball ripped from the crater the taxi had punched into the supermarket's roof, and the smell of burning synthetic meat and plastic wafted into the air. I turned down the next street and finally found Lilith's office. She didn't work for the biggest agency in Prime City. In fact, it wasn't even one of the top 10. They were so small that their CEO didn't even have a seat with the cabal. But she had been with me since the beginning. At the height of my popularity, I probably could have moved over to one of the top 3 agencies, but that just wasn't who I was. They had always treated me well, as evidenced by them still putting up with my shit through all of these last years. I walked up the small flight of stairs that made up their entryway and scanned my palm at the door. The lock buzzed and opened, and a long hallway greeted me. Lining each wall on either side was row after row of awards won by authors the agency had represented at one time or another. Buried amongst the dozens of other authors was one of my headshots. I looked so young and hopeful after my first, my only, book had come out. A picture of me now would look like a lot more than just 10 years had passed.
"Sarges!"
Lilith greeted me. She was a few years older than me, but looked quite a bit younger. She glowed with company-enforced enthusiasm, as well as someone who paid a healthy chunk of their weekly earnings to pay for a rigid skincare routine. At this point in our relationship, I couldn't tell if her smile was genuine or if she was hiding barely concealed annoyance and resentment. It was okay either way. My smile stopped being genuine when it came to the literary world years ago.
"Please come in and have a seat. Would you like something to drink? Coffee? Water?"
she continued. I wanted a whiskey, one ice, but I knew it was early enough that ordering it would raise eyebrows. "Coffee is fine," I said. She led me down the hallway and took me into a waiting room. Like the rest of the office, it was small but cozy. Worn but comfortable leather chairs were placed in a circle with a table in the middle showing a hollow projection of their upcoming releases. "Looks like you have a full catalog this summer," I remarked, thumbing through their upcoming release titles. Everything from new to veteran authors covered almost every genre I could think of. Even if I did manage to write something, it looked like I would be lost in the fold of it all.
"Oh, yeah. Do you remember Armin Kachadorian?"
she asked, the hum of her coffee maker droning on behind her. Of course I remembered her. Her first book came out around the same time mine did. Her book sold fewer copies than mine, but she had gotten a movie contract. The film version of her book went on to win awards, and now she was so rich that literary reality bent around her whenever she decided to write something. "The name sounds familiar," I lied.
"She is going to write a short story collection for us. It's been a while since we had something that will sell so well."
"About 10 years, if I was to guess," I joked. She returned to the waiting room and placed my coffee on the table in front of me. Her hand passed through the hollow projection book titles, and they warped around her like the air above a fire.
"Well, that is why I asked you to come in today, Sarges."
"Is the board finally telling you to cut me loose?" I asked, taking a sip of the coffee. Their top-of-the-line coffee machine made the one I had at home taste like crap in comparison.
Not exactly, but they do want to see some progress. I know you've been working hard these last few years, but we still haven't seen anything. If you have any rough drafts, some chapters I could show them, it would at least appease them for the time being.
She wanted to see some progress, some chapters, anything. I thought back to the file on my laptop. Word count, 15. Well, that certainly didn't bode well. That makes sense, yeah, I nodded.
Or could you at least tell me something about it? Do you have a title?
It's a sequel to Denizen of Earth. That was another lie. They had always tried to get me to squeeze a sequel out of my first book. The ending wasn't open-ended, nor had I ever planned on it. I knew it was what she wanted to hear.
Oh, wow! She beamed. I had no idea you were working on something like that. Sargis, they are going to absolutely love to hear this.
It was supposed to be something of a surprise. Another lie. You surprised your wife or girlfriend. You didn't surprise your agent. I am working at turning it into a trilogy, so it has taken me some time to make things work with the original story. Otherwise, I'll create too many plot holes, and you know how fans love to find those. If that happens, we will never hear the end of it on the convention circuit.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
She drank from her coffee mug and slid me a pack of cigarettes. She disapproved, much like Anoush did, but she was a literary agent. She would fund my dust habit if she thought it would make me happy. I took one and lit it.
This will certainly smooth things over with them, and I could probably keep them at bay about seeing any chapters for a few weeks, maybe a month more. But Sargis, they are going to have to see something. After all, you did get a pretty sizable advance on the contract.
She was right. Sizable to the extent that I had been living on it for the last 6 years as the royalties on my first book dried up. Of course, Anoush made more than enough money for both of us, but I liked contributing to the household wallet as much as possible. An advance wasn't a bonus, however, and if I broke the contract, I would owe it all back to them. If they demanded the advance back, it would be like them trying to get blood from a stone. I understand. I nodded again. It was my masterstroke. They couldn't hold me to a deadline if I never committed to a real timetable. It had worked for me thus far. I could probably keep stretching it out.
I'm glad we could agree on this, Sargis. You know how the board breathes down my neck about this kind of thing. You're the only client I have here, so they want me to ride you into the ground. I always told them that you don't work that way, and if we pushed you too hard, you could always go somewhere else.
I admired her honesty, but we both knew that hadn't been true in a long time. They were probably one of the few agencies that would deal with me at this point.
Well, I won't keep you, she smiled. You have work to do.
I stubbed my cigarette out in the provided ashtray and downed what was left of my coffee. Yeah, I should probably get to that if I want to finish it soon. We stood up, and she pulled me in for a hug, something I was always uncomfortable with. Lilith was a hugger, the touchy-feely type of person. I didn't even enjoy handshakes if I could help it. I never understood why business had to be concluded with the addition of physical touch. I left the office behind me and found the fire outside the supermarket was still raging. A crowd of gawkers had gathered as several crews of firefighter personnel stood outside as the supermarket's roof collapsed in on itself. Peacekeepers had gathered to keep the crowds at bay, though I was pretty sure they were doing it for extra calls, as who was going to rush toward a building that was actively burning down? Hey, I said to one of the gawkers, a younger guy with synth face mods and bright blue hair. Why aren't they putting out the fire?
The firefighters said they don't have a high enough subscription to their services. They have platinum, but said the owners should have the blue package.
And what is the blue package?
It specifically covers flux taxi-based explosions, though the peacekeepers said the taxi wasn't at fault.
Of course, I said sarcastically. The supermarket simply shouldn't have been sitting there. It was asking for it.
Yeah, that's what they said.
I left the scene and continued down the street. I wasn't going back home to work. I think even Lilith knew that, despite her best efforts. Enough time passed where I felt comfortable going to my favorite bar in the city, the Dive. It was located in the Undercity, or what Prime City had once been before the new city had been built directly over it. It had turned an entire community into a...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?